And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 FM, WMNF.org, your app, your smart speaker, or, you know, just listen next to somebody else's window. That would be creepy. Good afternoon. My name is Joellen Chilke. I am the hostess who loves you absolutely the mostest. If you are interested in getting in touch with Janelle or hearing that again, you can always go to our website, go to the programming and see the grid, and then hit on the midpoint Friday, and you will find the wonderful Janelle there. We've got a great show for you today. So excited. Guests live in the studio for the first time in over a year. We're going to be talking to Job Site Theater about Shock-Headed Peter. But meanwhile, we have a weather bulletin. Looks like it might rain.
Hi, we're your weather girl.
Already written in saying thanks a lot. I'm going to be singing It's Raining Men all day, as we should. What an absolute slice of joy. Happy Friday. Happy Pride Month. And also, it is the 5-year anniversary of the Pulse Massacre, and we should respond with joy. We should respond with, you cannot build fear, you cannot build hate. And so I remember when I first went dancing at the gay clubs, that song was it on everything. Who knows? I don't know. So thank you so much for tuning in today. Coming up, I just got a couple of program notes that I want to let you know. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Amy Gray and Spencer Myers here from Shock-Headed Peter at the Job Site Theater, a delightful and dark and funny show going up there. Also, right after this show is the Live Music Showcase, and I'll find out who's coming on that. And then Randy, Randy Wynn and Sid Flannery are going to sit in for the Rhythm Revival, and they're going to bring you the roots of rock and roll, some gospel, some old rock, who knows what the heck they're going to play. So it is going to be fantastic. So thanks for being here. If you want to get in touch, please do text us at 813-433-0885, or you can always send an email, dj@wmnf.org. Pride, everybody. Let's celebrate pride.
One man come in the name of love, one man come and go, one man come here to justify. Your revenge.
And that was some Tiger Lilies, and that is really fun. We just heard the Tiger Lilies. Thank you so much for tuning in to Art in Your Ear on WMNF. I am so excited. I'm really being a little bit, I don't even know what mics you're on anymore. I have no idea what's going on because for the first time in forever, I have guests in the studio. Welcome to the studio.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Oh, I even put the right mics on. So the Jobsite Theater has been doing live performances for a little bit now, but they sort of are, is this the last show of the season? Are we winding up the season? Is there one more? I think.
No.
There's something else. So, yeah. So, ignore me, and I'll get that information put up there. Mm-hmm. But with, and so they're doing this fantastic show called Shockheaded Peter. With us today is Amy Gray and Spencer Myers. Thank you, and welcome back to Art in Your Ear. And thank you for debuting my studio again, our studio.
It's lovely to be back here.
Yes, we're thrilled.
I'm thrilled. So what? Shockheaded Peter. It's not. I guess it's sort of a musical, but not really a musical.
It's a vaudeville of sorts. It's a burlesque.
A little cabaret in there. Like we have an MC who narrates the storyline.
Paul Potenza. Mm-hmm.
Who's a character on his own. He's perfect for this role.
He is. I mean, I know that he's acting. Like, I know he's a performer and he's acting, but I'm like, oh, Paul could do this.
I feel like this role was written for Paul. It's pretty fantastic. But yeah, I mean, you have the MC who does narrate and goes over the overarching storyline of the mother and father, and then also, you know, has these little interjections that bridge into some of the other stories, the little fairy tales, so to speak, that are scattered throughout.
So in a way, it's kind of, to me, sort of a German expressionist vaudeville with this based on Shockheaded Peter, and see if I can do it without massacring. It's with the Struwwelpeter, who was a character in a series of folk stories that were written in the 1800s, back in the 19th century. There's a lot of, not visually, but it seems, or maybe a little bit visually, there's a lot of references to sort of a comfort level that you have if you like Edward Gorey.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
And I have literally, I am an Edward Gorey fanatic, so there's the book, the alphabet book, and that lists 26 ways that little children die.
A is for Amy who fell down the stairs.
There we go, that's my girl. Exactly. Was there any hesitation in getting involved with this?
Not at all.
No.
Spencer and I have been talking about doing this since 2012. Spencer, even earlier than that.
So, I mean, this show in particular, I'm pretty certain every company member of Jobsite who knows of this show has wanted... Sorry.
Now you're professional.
Now I'm professional. I have a headset on. Everyone in this company has wanted to do the show in some way, or eventually, you know, do the show. And so for us to be able to finally do it, it's kind of a dream come true.
Now, are the aerial dancers part of the show? Is that a special extra added bonus by Jobsite?
It's added by us. Now, basically, this script is a 22-page script.
Oh, geez.
And you literally have to, the company puts together their own version. Like every company that does this, it's a very different production.
Right.
And part of the things that we can bring to it is we have Katrina Cassandra, who have been doing aerials for a couple of years now, and they bring the aerial work. Mm-hmm. We have puppetry. We have the band. Like Jeremy, there is no interstitial music. Mm. He created everything that you hear that's not the actual songs.
And those are done by the Tiger Lilies.
Spencer and I
were like fanboy and girling them before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, for me, how I got introduced to this show is I was part of the original cast of Gorey Stories when Jobsite did in 2007, and our pre-show music had a couple of songs from the Tiger Lilies from this show, and I remember going to David Jenkins saying, who is this? Like, he's singing his falsetto. Like, I could do that. Who is this? He's like, oh, it's the Tiger Lilies. Oh, you'll love the show. It's called Shockheaded Peter. Listened to it, fell in love with them. I'm lucky I've seen them live, but ever since then, like, this has been a dream show to do. Mm-hmm. So
let's talk for a moment. So it's Jobsite Theater. It's in downtown Tampa. I went to the dress rehearsal earlier this week, excuse me, and I just want to get this out of the way because it is very important, but not to me very interesting. There is distance between the tables. Like, there was a lot of distance between the tables. I saw the wonderful, fantastic Joe Pop there and the amazing photographer James Zambon there. And we were far apart from each other.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that when in your in the previews, you could actually see space between people.
I've performed in the Jabe now a number of times. And, you know, you see everybody back to back, whatever. These last couple previews, you see the space in between every table. You can see, like, they're about 11 feet apart, each table. Mm-hmm. And then you also have the, is it 11 feet from the stage to the first set of tables, something like that.
Yeah.
So you're far enough away from the actors, you're far enough away from the other tables, you are still required to wear your masks inside, you are required to have the temperature check when you first come in. So we are doing everything we possibly can, the Straz job site, in order to keep the cast, the crew, our patrons, all safe.
And I want to mention, even though all that's happening, because some people might be like, well, it's not going to be fun if I go. It is. Because I was there. I was socially distanced. I was masked. I was everything. And I felt, I wasn't sure if you're supposed to laugh or not in dress rehearsal.
Please
but
do.
I was like tittering. And finally, I couldn't even titter anymore. I was like, oh my God, this is so funny. So I want to make sure people knew about that, that there is, it felt very safe. And yet it's still, I had the theater experience, which was the first time since the pandemic started that I've been in the theater. And it just, my heart like grew and exploded. Which was sad because I'm dead now and I'm doing a show from my grave. But speaking of dead, I want to talk a little bit about the show.
Well, speaking of that word, I have officially claimed that is the number one word I say in this show is dead. I can't even count how many times I do it within the songs. So those songs written by the Tiger Lilies, based off of these actual stories, these folk tales, deals with a lot of horrible ends to some horrible, naughty children. You know, it really makes the Grimm's fairy tales look like Mother Goose. Right. And you know, it's not that, you know, terrible ends happen out of nowhere. It's they were told not to do something, and we see why they should not do something.
And what's so funny is that this was like a rampant bestseller when it came out. Like these,
Mark Warren has a copy, a 50-year-old copy that he's had ever since he was a child.
Right.
He's our drummer. They're all multi-talented musicians in our three-man band, but he plays about six or seven different instruments.
That's actually part of the joy is watching him switch out or play several instruments at once. I actually have a copy at home, too. I was laughing. I was like, I have that. So the stories are all... does everyone die? I think everyone dies. There's matches.
Well,
what happens with the matches?
Well, you know, you should never play with matches.
Mama
unless you have
Mary.
An adult nearby.
Well, even
and even then, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not promoting children to play with matches at all. But, you know, don't play with matches. You could set the place on fire or yourself.
And sucking your thumb?
Well, you should not do that. So in these German tales, there is a tailor who naughty children that suck their thumb, he will cut them off. And then they don't have a thumb to suck.
Or two thumbs to suck.
Or two
thumbs.
Exactly.
So Spencer, your character is the siren.
Yes.
Siren has several different meanings. Which meanings did you embrace from that word?
Oh, I'm the singer of this show. It's really great too because we are such a wonderfully talented cast, and so many of us are singers in the show. So we all jump in. Mm-hmm. Amy sings a beautiful duet with Jonathan Harrison, and Colleen, you know, kicks into like this very fun, exciting number of Johnny Head in the Air. So you know, and all of us, we all sing backup. So I sing the majority of the songs that are in this show. I'm the siren who's, you know, singing all these horrific things of these stories.
I mean, but the siren is a very alluring, somewhat possibly devious
and horrific in many ways. And I embrace that. You know, I do that with the makeup and
you
know,
it is aplomb.
Yes. my siren takes a lot of joy in the horrible ends to all these characters.
Your siren does.
Oh, he loves it. He loves it. It's just like, well, we told you not to do this, and this is what happens. See?
I wonder what political party your siren would belong to. And Amy, you have the mother.
Yes.
Starts off, she's lovely.
Yes, the mother and father begin the show, as any mother and father would, praying for a little baby.
Right.
Everything's happy. And then as time goes on, and they finally get their wish. Things don't quite go as they had planned.
Of course, this is vaudeville. Mm-hmm. As actors, and I was thinking about when I was watching it, as actors, though, and you've done all sorts of types of mm-hmm. theater, did you have to, like, go for, like, what is my motivation? This is my bait. Like, did you have to turn on the, which actor cells did you guys have to use in your brain? Or was there a whole part, like, I don't even need to worry about that. I'm just going to go with this.
I think it's pretty straightforward as to what the mother's going through. I mean, I decided that I wasn't going to go all, like, Stanislavski or anything. I wasn't doing any method work, but I was looking at, okay, in this story, she starts to unravel mm-hmm. and she gets to the end and she is just a shell of her former self. Doesn't mean it's a bad shell. It's a different shell.
It's a different shell.
And so it's, how does she get there and what is she thinking? So there are moments where you see the breaking down.
And you
her.
Get a little concerned about her maternal instinct.
Well,
From the very start.
And you listen to these songs and you're like, oh, the parents will. Oh, it's the parents' fault. And Polly even throws in the line, I blame the parents at one point.
And I will say what I do enjoy, because I feel like there's two storylines that happen. There is the over arc of the parents, which is narrated by Paul, and then of course he throws in these other stories where I jump in.
Paul, I just want to remind listeners, Paul being kind of the MC
of the show, kind of the puppet master of everything that's happening. But what I love is this odd psychology based progression of the parents and really watching how they break down and watching the results of their actions, how it affects them later and how it starts, changing them and warping them to something different or something that they always were. And for me, that is what I enjoy the most of the show, as a bystander of just this lovely arc that happens. And of course, I'm on stage for a lot of the crazy things that happen.
Yeah, we
the
call them dumb shows because there's really not a lot of dialogue between Harrison and I as the parents. At the very top of the show, there's some lines. At the very end of the show, there's some lines. But in the middle, everything's basically a dumb show. Mm-hmm. And that was what we all created, that none of that is in the script.
I haven't done my due diligence. David Jenkins is the director mm-hmm. of it. There's everything was written for it. Was that, was it something when you guys were creating, when you're saying creative, was it something mm-hmm. that you walked in and he knew what he was going to have you do, or it was suggestions? And then talk a little bit about the rehearsal and how things developed.
He had a good idea of where he wanted to go, but from day one, David Jenkins made it very clear, like, this was going to be a very organic process. Like, this show was handpicked with people who have done this type of theater before. We've all worked with each other in some capacity. And mm-hmm. so it was, that trust was already there. And so we got to play. And he wanted it to very much this atmosphere of, we're playing, we're building this. Mm-hmm. So, everyone really got their chances. I'll let you talk more on that.
Well, and like for the dumb shows that I was mentioning, we had the beats. He had like, we need to do this, 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 and this. But how it all molded together was really all of us working together to get to that point.
Is that, how often does something like that happen in the theater?
Not often.
Rare.
Yeah.
Very rare.
It must have been fun. Was it scary?
No, I love it.
It's been really fun. It sounds great. It's like, it's not quite improv. It's improv at one mm-hmm. point, but then it's codifying the energy of improv.
Right. Like when we did Three Penny Opera, there is a script, there is a score, and there is everything that you have to abide by. Now, as an actor, as a director, you bring things to every production, but the outline is very clear mm-hmm. of what you mm-hmm. need to do. This, I mean, literally, as I said, 22 pages, and most of it is what we made up in rehearsal.
Yeah, and it's great too. I mean, especially when you have people that you trust and, they do something, you're like, ooh, wait, oh, if you're going to do that, oh, I can do this. Oh, okay, great. And then we really had these moments of just building and building and building.
Well, and I had no idea until I saw the photos that James took. There's a moment where I'm sitting on the chaise with a tea cup in my hand. Spencer's doing it behind me, and I had no idea. So there's like, he saw me doing something, and now he's playing, riffing off of it. And
I mean, I didn't really get to play like they did and build all these things. I waited until everyone
had
it, and I stole it all. I mimic everything they do as
I
sing.
But I had no idea.
Like
a puck. You're like a puck.
I am in many ways.
And that's Spencer Meyer and Amy. I'm sorry. I was going to call you Amy Grant. That's wrong. Amy Gray. Here from Shockheaded Peter at Jabsite Theater. It's just opening this week, and then it runs. You all have already added extra shows, so it sounds like it's
selling very well, so we were able to add on some additional Wednesday performances. Right. We don't have a 4th of July show.
But we added that weekend minus the 4th of July.
Oh, okay. Correct. Well, everybody needs a holiday.
Exactly.
Right? I want to just sort of mention a few stories, and you guys give me your take on them, and then maybe talk about like how it went from being just a few lines in the script to where it became. And I was thinking there was one, where you're doing this. I want to make sure I get stories that you're doing. Of course, there's Fidgety Philip. Mm-hmm. The story of Fidgety Philip. I was Fidgety a Fidgety Philip.
Yeah. I was too.
Fidgety Philip can't sit still.
Yeah. No.
And his parents don't appreciate that.
Not at all.
And they try. They really try to get him to just settle down.
We start off all happy, like, little boy, you're going to listen. You're going to stay at the table and be good. And then it just devolves into, well, his untimely end. But one of the ways that this is very different was there's an entire music break where now we have some, I'm not going to give it all away, but we have some special dancing that occurs. We have some drum solos, and it's none of that is in the script. None of that is in the music. It's just what we do. I'm going to stop there because I'm letting you run this.
Go ahead. Me or him?
You.
So, and it was really interesting on that when I was doing research on this, that there are people, and I'm sad because in the time of pandemia, it may not happen as much, but there are people that go to many, many different versions of Shockheaded Peter because of exactly what you're talking about, that there's, you know, every theater gets to sort of say, this is who we are with their version. Which is why I was especially excited to see that Jobsite was doing it at the same time that we were allowed to have guests back in the studio. Yay! Thank you for coming in. Because it is sort of like an Uber Jobsite production. It has a lot of Jobsite. The cast that... I laughed because at one point, I think, I can't remember if it was Paul or someone said, was it you? Like, oh, Giles should be here to do this.
That would be Paul.
Right.
It's a great ad-lib. It really is a great ad-lib.
But it made me think, like, here we have the Jobsite, like, core. You know, people who I love seeing and I've seen so many times in Jobsite in that kind of different area, somewhere between vaudeville, steampunk, and then Americana and...
It's a delightfully dark show. Yeah. It's very weird.
There's cirque feeling to it because of the aerial.
Right, yeah.
It's a circus feel because of just the color palette and everything that we're wearing.
And, you know, and I'm a firm believer, too, of people who like a lot of our off-the-wall, darker things, like gory stories that, you know, have this little edge of play to them. If you like gory stories, I mean, I consider this gory stories in Technicolor. You know, we just added some color to it. It's the same type of vibe. I think it's funnier, actually, than gory stories. But yeah, I mean, with all the mix of colors and everything else, I think this is just a fantastic night. Plus, we've all been locked away in our houses, and to be able to just come out and see theater in socially distanced... I've sat in the Jape for some of these shows, and it's lovely.
It's theater. It's back.
It just feels, you know, when you're socially distant from other tables, I feel like the show's just being performed for myself. And I'm okay with that.
I have to say I'm okay, too, because there's times where I'm like, this person is way too close to me, and they're on their phone. Go. Stop texting.
And I will say, you know, for anyone who's like, oh, I don't want to have to wear a mask, it's 80 minutes. Yep. 80 minutes. It's no intermission. It flies by.
I was surprised. I was really, like, I knew it was ending. Obviously, you see, okay, this is the big ending. But I looked and I was like, oh, my God, you know, that it went very quickly. So there's also another story, which I thought was, there was the, where is it? Is it not Flying Robert? Where is it? Oh, the, what is it? Did you do the Schwarzenbuben? The story of the Inky Boys. There's just
which for so Tiger Lily's.
Right. That's okay. But there's the thumb sucker. There's the soup eating. There's the fidgety. There's the look in the air. So all these stories about are just normal things that kids don't do right. Like that they could behave better, and they all die because of it.
Well, and you know, I think one of my favorite stories is Cruel Frederick because it's the worst child of all of them. I mean, he's a terror. Mm-hmm. He's Rosemary's baby in many ways. He hurts animals, and he hurts people around him, and he's very a violent, violent child. And he just messes with the wrong dog one day. And the dog gets even. Now, I will say in the original story, the dog actually gets the meal from the family after the end of Frederick. We don't have that, which they did not write that in the music. And
really?
I'm a little sad by that. But, it's the second, it's really the second story of any of the children. And you go, oh, so this is the route we're going. Got it. And right from that moment, you're like, got it. I'm on this journey now. Mm-hmm. I know what to expect.
That was good writing and good everything in that you can't really fool yourself as to what this is about. However, there's the mother and the father, and that story sort of, in a way, goes consistently. It seems like you get killed or die 20, 30 times.
Just look, bit by bit, we die, right? Little pieces of us never to return, right? But what happens in the end, and I'm not going to give anything away here, but what we become, Polly has a line that there is a lesson. Mm. And we learn this lesson. And I think that for as dark and as dreary as some of these stories are, though they're very, very funny, it's a good combination of that light and dark.
Right.
Right.
And also it's
a happy ending.
Technically,
a happy ending.
Sure.
Depends on how you look at it. Are you a half, glass half empty or half full?
Right. Or is it full of straight, grain alcohol? We don't know. When you were, I want to go back to the rehearsal process. Mm-hmm. And you started without having this. So if there is an example where you can say where you started and built something, for instance, you talked about the teacup, that you were spoofing Amy behind her, Simon was spoofing the mother behind. Talk a little bit, where were some areas? What is that for people who aren't actors and don't get to rehearse? How does that work in rehearsal processes?
You have the director who has the vision. And if the director doesn't have a good, clear vision of what they're wanting to see as the end result, then it can be a pretty murky process. But David has a pretty clear vision of what he wants to get to. And now the question is, how are we going to get there? And then he just kind of draws out some beats and let's build upon each of those beats.
So, right. So that's a very technical way, which is not at all what I'm asking you.
Oh, okay.
So I'm interested, and I think people will be interested, what exactly are you doing? You try things one time? Were there things that you tried and were discarded? And you're like, do you need one thing to be able to build something else? If something changes in the end, you need to change something in the beginning. How does that work?
I'll go back to, it was a very organic process. So, things just developed. We all like trying different things. Some things work, some things don't. For me, first of all, I was learning every single song. I mean, they are wordy stories.
They are. They're not just songs. They're like whole entire little movies.
Absolutely. But for me, all of my actions are just to help aid what I'm saying, to help go along with the process. While the dumb shows are happening in front of me, while I'm singing these things, I'm trying to gesture, I'm trying to do this. Something that we added in, and we only could do it with the first audience, and I don't even think this happened when you got to see the show, is breaking the fourth wall. I mean, I now address the audience during some of the songs and just trying to, and it really just helps break that, oh yeah, we can laugh. Oh, this is fun. And that's just something I couldn't do until I had an audience.
Yeah. Rehearsals don't let you do that. And you can sit there and kind of plot it out in your head of, oh, I could do this at this point. But until you have the audience, you really don't know. One of the things also I think might go to what you were asking, the maze of mayhem. So there's this moment where Polly is like, they're in the maze of mayhem. Well, we kind of knew what was going to happen, but until we got, the silks, the certain props that we had, we're just kind of moving through and maybe we'll try this. Maybe we'll walk here. Maybe we'll, and David was like, oh, Amy, when you did this, you literally acted as though you bumped into a wall and it stopped you. Even though there's no wall.
Right.
Right. So it's things that we'll just try it. We'll just throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And then it kind of evolved from that because once I did a few things, Harrison did a few things, and then he's like, yep, there it is. I want to see those moments. Mm-hmm. And that's how it kind of built.
So now you talked you spoke about needing to have the director with a vision as to where it should go. Will you guys talk a little bit about the fact that you've worked together, that you know each other? Was that as a necessary component, that there was a trust already?
I think because of David handpicking this particular cast, he knew that he's like, all I got to do is this, this, and this, and it's going to grow. It's going to build. Spencer and I, we've counted.
We've done a few shows together. Just a couple.
Just a couple.
Probably
actually,
10 plus at this point.
I was going to say, I counted 11.
10 plus.
Right. Exactly.
I just stopped counting at 10. I was
I mean, I think there's shows I don't know, but I went back through my stuff and went back to something, and I was like, I think there have been three at 11, which was wonderful when he said that you guys were coming on together, because I was like, yes, I can deal with that.
We have a very wonderful chemistry. I mean, we're very good friends. The first show show we were in together was a dream play.
Yeah.
But we actually really didn't become friends until we did the Joe Pop musical Pericles.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we're like, oh, we actually get along. Oh, this is great. And then since then, I mean, we usually got paired paired together in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
Either I was after her and she could care less, or we were husband and wife, me being the wife in Hedwig. So, I mean, it's been nice. You know, you build this friendship, and with all of us in this show, we have all worked with each other multiple times in some capacity. And so we already know how to react to each other, what the other person's probably going to bring to the table, and what we can play off of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no... I don't know if this is going to upset you or anything. Mm. You know, we're comfortable enough. And I think that's key for this process.
It allows you the freedom to just walk in the room and start to create and not have to build up the rapport first.
Right. That sounds
good. Look at Amy taking all of my jargon and throwing into this beautiful one sentence.
That makes me think of another question. And listeners, I'm speaking with Spencer Meyer and Amy Gray. The theater has been back a little bit longer. I know theater's been back, and this is just my first chance, but for a long time, theater wasn't back. Uh-huh. So as actors, as performers, I mean, I know you have other things in your life as well, but what were you doing over the pandemic? Was there stuff that you could do that filled that soul, part of your soul for you?
Nothing that could fill it. I was actually in Colorado ready to put on a show. We were about to start our tech week when we got the word everything was shutting down. So that particular production, we're like, we're still going to do it because it's only going to be a month or two. We'll be back. And of course, we all know how went. We recorded in our own homes. We self-taped certain scenes. And then we had a video editor actually splice them together because we were like, oh, this will be like little teasers for people who can come and see it in 2 months. But after that, you know, we ended up having like some Zoom things. Caitlin Eason and I, we did a scene from a play, just her and I via Zoom, and then put it out on job sites. So they had the socially distant soliloquies, and then I forget what was the other,
digital shorts,
things like that. So we like would submit things like that. I know I did a monologue from Titus Andronicus. You know, there were things that we did personally just to feel like we were still kind of in it, but nothing that could ever really fill that void.
And you need an audience.
You do.
You absolutely need an audience. It changes everything. I mean, every show, it just completely changes how you go about things, how you react to things. And and audiences get this too. There's a reason why there's nothing like live theater. You feed off that energy.
Yep.
You need that energy.
There's a role. An audience plays an essential role in theater.
Absolutely.
Even, I mean, less interactive, even in the movie theater, there's certain... I'm not good at watching movies on laptops or TVs and stuff. I watch movies in theaters, or else I usually end up not seeing them. But part of it is, like, there's some... I want to see In the Heights in a theater with other people so we can have goosebumps together. Like, I want to see stuff. I want to have goosebumps together. I want to find out the same time as other people find out when, you know, people get trapped in...
Well, A Quiet Place. I remember seeing when the first one came out. I'm like, I had to see that in the theater. You know, like, that was just something I thought would be too good to pass up. And so now
that... scared.
Yeah. I mean, I thought... Now the second one's out or coming out.
Right,
I can't wait to get back in the theater and watch that one.
Right, that's awesome. We're starting to run out of time. And I have so many questions I wanted to ask you. One of the other things I always ask at the end, do you have stuff coming up? Anything coming up next?
I head back to Colorado and hopefully either come back here for another show or have something happen out there.
All right, people, get her.
Yeah, that's right. Got it, you know. It'd be perfect. You know, come and see Amy before she's gone. Right. Hopefully she'll be right back.
Right back.
No, it's just trying to get through the show. We open tonight, so I'm very excited.
I'm looking real quickly to see what is coming up for Job Site Theater. So coming up, there's Dr. Ride's American Beach House. So that looks like it's the new season. Ooh, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is the show. And you can go online to Job Site Theater, spelled American way, T-E-R, jobsitetheater.org, and see all sorts of stuff about Shock-Headed Peter. So it goes past July 4th, but then that's...
No, July 3rd
July
is the
3rd
official
is the
last
day. Okay.
Yeah.
I should look and see what days of the week things are. Oh, look. So July 3rd, and that's a Saturday night.
Yes.
I have to say, I love when they do the aerial stuff, and it's really fun to watch that. And it's a little bit scary to watch it, because I know they know what they're doing, but when they drop really fast, like, did that startle you on the stage?
I can't watch that, and I'm glad I'm not in. I'm glad I never have to look at them when they drop, because it stops my heart for a second every time.
I love it, and I'm always looking right at Cassandra.
I was going to say, you're right there.
It's spectacular to watch. I mean, and when they do it in the song Flying Robert, it's so, so beautiful of a song. And then, and the aerials include it. It's phenomenal. But yes, as an actor or as a human,
as a friend,
I get very concerned. They're fully capable. They're absolutely phenomenal.
Well, so Amy Gray, Spencer Meyer, thank you so much. Thank you for rechristening our studio with your artistic presences. It's
truly
been
a pleasure.
Lovely.
So back.
Thank you.
Talking
so
to you.
I
miss talking to people in person and asking them questions so much. And starting off with you guys is just, I just want to cry and hug. So Shock-Headed Peter is at Job Site Theater June 9th. Sort of. But officially tonight through July 3rd, you can go online to jobsitetheater.org and the information is right there when you pull it up for tickets or any other information. There you go. And then stay tuned. And if something is coming up, please do let us know so we can make sure our listeners know. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And there we go. This seemed like a good thing to play after Shocking. Little Squirrel Nut Zippers here on Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5 FM.
In the afterlife, you could be headed for the serious strife. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow they'll be held to pay. I mean about future calamity. I used to think the idea was obsolete until I heard the old man stamping his feet. This is a place where eternally applied to their body. Teeth are extruded and bone to ground and baked into cakes which are passed around.
Hi, folks. This is John McCutcheon. Wanted to let you know that I'm going to be doing a live streaming concert with WMNF on Saturday, June 12th at 8 p.m. Besides lots of music, I'm going to be visiting with Krista Tippett of On Being and WMNF's own Jeannie Hamilton.
To buy tickets, go to WMNF.org. Hope to see you there and support public radio.
Y'all means all.
This is a WMNF public service announcement. This summer, EPIC, Empath Partners in Care, is launching its sexual health center in St. Petersburg to provide essential sexual health and disease prevention services. More at myepic.org.
And that's there's Cat's figure pretty prominently in Shock-Headed Peter there. And someone asked me, Jobsite Theater at the Straz in downtown Tampa. Hey, I want to let you know, coming up after the NPR News, which is right after the end of the show, Steve Gillette and Cindy Mager, I think, and then Cindy Callett and Greg Larson will be featured on the live music showcase. These are performances from a few years ago and going back into the vault and finding wonderful performances. So stay tuned. After that, of course, Randy and Sid are sitting in on Rhythm Revival. It is a show with roots of rock and roll. Then we've got the Rebel doing Bumpy Ride, a drinking show with a music problem. And that's rockabilly, rock and roll, upbeat, happy music with some rants, followed by, oh my goodness, the best hour in radio, Route 66, Jump Jive and Swing. is from 7 to 8. Then we've got the Soul Party Classic, R&B and Soul. And then after that, Florida Blues and R&B with Flashback Friday. So stay with us. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to be out of here in just a few minutes. You are listening to Art in Your Ear on WMNF. There's some stuff going on. There's an art walk in St. Pete tomorrow night. And one of the places I know I'll be checking out is the Factory St. Pete. It's the newest art area in St. Pete. It's just a game changer. The Factory is located at 2622 Fairfield Avenue South. And if you go to the Art in Your Ear page on Facebook, you can find information there, plus a bunch of other events going on. Tempest Projects has a great show, art show. There's a ton of art shows. There's a play by the Tampa Repertory Theater, and that's at the Ybor City Museum State Park, which is so interesting. The play is called Every Brilliant Thing, and it's a wonderful way that kids deal with their parents' angst. And it sounds like a fantastic show. And that information is up there. Thanks, everybody. Hello, Mark A. It's lovely to hear from you. It's lovely to hear from everybody else. I appreciate you being out there. I appreciate you supporting WMNF and community radio. We are the community radio station of the area. We're it. So if you want to find out what is going on, please do check us out online, in social media, and on your radio. Next week, I think I'm doing a Pride music show. That is my plan. We'll see how far it goes. I hope you stick with us. You are listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. This has been Art in Your Ear. Joel and Schilke signing off. Stay tuned for the NPR News. And thank you, 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 thank you. I love you guys. Bye.
And crush it till the petals fall. You always break the kindest heart with a hasty word you can't recall. So if I broke your heart last night, it's because I loved you most of all. You always hurt the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. You always take the sweetest rose, crush it till the petals fall. You always break the cutter's heart with a hasty word you can't recall. So if I broke your heart last night, it's because I loved you most of all.
Sitting on the shelf, he is just a toy, but I turn him on and he comes to life. Automatic joy, that is why I want him.